Do the next right thing to make your marriage sing.
All I ever wanted was to be in love with you. When your eyes met mine, I knew that this was really true.
Hello and welcome to The Music of Marriage
with Bob and
Abby.
Do you like the way we do that?
I don't know.
Our kids, I think it's corny, but, you know, what can I say? You can't please everyone.
That's how you get attention, by being corny.
Sometimes it is.
Can't be too normal.
What do you think, Darryl? I don't know.
You can't please everyone, so you got to please yourself.
There you go. Okay.
Isn't that a song?
Yeah.
Is it? Yeah. I like that one. So right. We've been with the music of marriage, obviously, talking about marriage and also relationships, so it's not something you can only listen to or benefit from if you're married. Or wherever we're at, we always need a little pushing and shoving and inspiration to get us from point A to point B to point Y and X and Z.
Sometimes I need a swift kick in the you know what, but
well, we all do, and it's an interesting thing about life on this side of eternity, which is one of the points we're going to talk about, is our eternal destiny and how we can restore, how restoration of marriage and family is achieved when we are more aware of our purpose, what we were created for, and a vision of the good that can happen when we adapt our minds to that eternal destiny, because generational strengths and effects happen generationally. So mm-hmm. Bob was talking the other day about, you know, well, we've been talking about the Ten Commandments. Like, remember them?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Not something that's much in our faces today, but or in places, because they've been kind of scrubbed from our vision and our hearing in many places in our communities and society.
And unwittingly through our consciousness, from our consciousness, you know, scrubbed. So, yeah, we're not often aware. So, and today we are talking about restoration in marriage and family relations. Through what? Through obedience to simple commands, 10 to be exact. So, you know, the 10 commandments govern our relationship to God and man. And they're complete in themselves. They're not lacking in anything. And why? Because we've been given them by our Creator, who knows better than anyone. And they're absolutely perfect. So the question is, and this... we're going to focus on this throughout the show, because it's so fundamental and so basic and so foundational, so simple, and yet we often are looking for more complicated approaches to things that just don't work as well or don't work at all. So you can really trace any problem with any relationship or any problem in society to breaking one of or more of the Ten Commandments, essentially. This is how important they are. So the question is, why have the most powerful relationship imperatives in the entire universe been marginalized today as passé? I guess they're passé, or so not now, as the young kids would say, or old and dusty, as some other people would say. But, you know, that's a good question. Some forces, are persuading entire generations that we don't need these rules for living anymore. And that's why we are in the situation we are as a society, as America, that's, you know, all of a sudden our Christian foundation has been eroded to the point where it's almost unrecognizable, except for a handful who happen to be silenced on many fronts because they don't want to hear God's law. Because if they hear God's law, they intuitively know that they have to be accountable to God's law. And they don't want that because they want to do what they want to do. So, and as a result, relationships go that way. You know, the Bible says we reap what we sow, and that's a fixed law in nature that that can't be violated. You know, it just is, and there's nothing you can do about it except for, you know, submit to it. Any farmer will tell you that. Any gardener will tell you that.
Kind of like the freeze last night. What did it go down to here, Daryl? It was like 29 by us or something like that?
It was supposed to be 26. I don't know that it may have been back in the low 30s in the house, but I don't know.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, the temperature, there's fixed laws of nature, what you were talking about. So what goes up must come down or whatever. Wasn't there a song, Tom Jones? Who is that? What
spinning
goes
wheels.
Up must come down.
Yeah, that spinning wheel.
So you
who
go.
Who sang that spinning wheel?
Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
Blood, Sweat, and Tears, that's right.
Yeah. I always loved that song, especially on the boardwalk in New Jersey with the rides on the piers.
Yeah.
That's when I remember those songs, and I think about the rides, what goes up must come down. I think, I hope I get down from up here.
Yes, but we just planted a whole bunch of fruit trees and an oak tree in our backyard. We saw this frost coming, and we thought, well, we better protect these things because they're kind of new trees. And so Abby had our landscaper put mulch all around them to kind of protect the roots. And these little donuts that hold water and drip water slowly in there on top of that. And so that's, and for our garden, we had to cut plastic and throw it over top, heavy mill plastic, so that the frost won't kill the plants. And that's always, that's all because there is a cause and effect in nature and you can't ignore it. So you either, you know, do what you got to do or, you know, suffer the consequences. So that's what we're talking about here with the Ten Commandments.
And relationships.
Yes.
Marriage and otherwise.
Yes, they apply to all relationships. And these commandments sum up everything in the Bible, all the law and the prophets. Mm-hmm. And God made it very simple for us by only giving us 10, which Jesus said sums up the law and the prophets. So essentially you don't have to memorize the whole Bible to know how to live rightly and not wrongly. In fact, Jesus even whittled it down to two commands out of the 10. He said, and all the commandments are summed up in these two things, to love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. So essentially we have two commands regulating all relationships between God and man. Pretty darn simple, right? Not so easy to do, but that's the challenge, and God's there to help us. He didn't just give us these things and said, you're on your own, you know, see you in eternity.
Well, also, it's good to have a standard. I mean, it's like a ruler is 12 inches long. Everybody's ruler is the same length, or it should be. But if somebody comes along and says, well, here, use my ruler, and it's longer than your ruler, and the other guy's 12-inch ruler is shorter, so you have all these different standards, then your house is going to fall if you try to build a house where every contractor comes with a different length measuring stick, right?
Was that that guy whose foot size was 13, and so he thought a foot should be 13 inches? Something like that.
Oh, is that a joke? Did you get that? That was right off the top of your head.
Well, you know, some of the worst things come off the top of my head, what can I say? Anyway, let's just forget I said
that. Well, that was pretty clever. Anyway, but the measure that we use for everything in life, we kind of want it to be accurate, you know. Mm-hmm. You go get your car fixed or you're watching sports, you know. How much air is in the tire? How much air is in the football? How much, I mean, people have major problems when somebody doesn't do up to what the standard is.
That's right.
And then sometimes, you know, one of the worst thing you can do is change the standard from what everybody's believes that it is. But then in deception, you know, you're like fudged around, and we all have lost money or lost this or lost that because of that type of thing. So as we've been talking about deception and recognizing that, it's not only a matter of, you know, having a vision for generally what you want and what's good that you would like that would make you happy, but it's also knowing these two things, these basically two commands that the 10 are summed up in, and that is, if you're putting God first, and is this what would be pleasing to Him, the way I'm treating my husband or my friend or thinking about people, and am I submitting my thoughts to that standard, and then am I doing to my neighbor as I would, you know, have done to myself, like that Dylan quote we said last week about from his song, and everybody knows the golden rule, but then doing it is another thing. I forget the words exactly. It was more poetic.
Yes.
But it's such a challenge. I think everybody, we're all in the same boat, you know. And I think about this a lot, which is obviously why we do this station, this program, The Music of Marriage, and because we care about the fact that there's a lot of suffering, and the suffering that we experience or others experience in the disintegration and alienation that happens in relationships, and how to bridge that gap, how to recognize, my standard is wrong, you know. This ruler I'm using isn't 12 inches, it's different. The measure I'm using for others isn't the same as I'm using for myself. I expect more from others. I expect this, this, and this from my spouse, but I don't expect that of myself even. So it's a real constant exercise in humility, not futility, but humility, to kind of be willing to look more deeply into what is the spiritual backdrop, what's in our heart and our mind, how we're thinking, so that we can align ourselves with true standards and then apply those to our situation, which ends up in a house that's built that will stand, relationships that can be repaired, and so forth.
So in discussing restoration in our relationships, and restoration is a good thing to strive for in every relationship one has, but especially we are focusing on marriage and the family. And so restoring those relationships happen by adapting our minds to our eternal destiny and our earthly requirements, because generational sin starts with us. You know, throughout the generations, it was a foredrawn conclusion that you obeyed your parents and you didn't diss your parents. And that pretty much stood for a long time. In fact, I don't think it was until our generation that an entire generation decided all at once that we can diss our parents or forsake their standards, because you know, and the whole the hippies '60s revolution was a revelation too, but revolution started all that, and then our children's generation picked it up, because a lot of the people who had those attitudes became teachers, and some of them pastors, and brought some of these attitudes into the schools and whatnot, and other areas of society, and all of a sudden, we were wondering why our kids aren't paying attention to us, and why they think they can, you know, get away with talking back, or not showing honor and respect. But and this has. And there are other, you know, systems of belief in place that people have chosen besides commandments that cause people to create their own standards that are not anything like the Ten Commandments. So what you get is breakdown in relationships that end up being breakdown in societies as a whole. So, you know, take the Fifth Commandment, for instance. Well, and the question is, you know, if not the Ten Commandments, then what, you know, has any system of thought and belief ever rivaled them? Well, see, rationally speaking, we could say no, and we should say no, because that happens to be the truth. And but other people would say, well, you know, my viewpoint is different, because I have my own point of view, my own truth, so to speak. Well, you know, people can have their own truth, but is it really truth? There's only one truth, really. And as I was saying, but just with children, let's talk about the Fifth Commandment, because if they're not instructed to honor their father and mother, then what happens? Well, the family breaks down, and chaos ensues. And if you don't think that affects marriages, it really does affect marriages too, when there's all this conflict going on and differences of values, beliefs, and affecting attitudes and actions.
Especially if the parent allows the children, one spouse allows the children to be disrespectful to their wife or husband in the home, and then you're basically saying that's okay. And if you disrespect your spouse in front of your children and allow the children to carry that theme in their heart, mind, and their words and behavior, you know, yeah, mom, you always, or yeah, my dad never, blah, blah, blah. Well, where did they get that from? They get that from a parent who leaked information to the kids that the kids shouldn't know about their disgruntlement with their spouse. Because now you're passing on, instead of solving this problem with your spouse or keeping it, you know, within the privacy of your relationship and the sacredness of your own relationship, and demonstrating that there are walls there that in which you operate to fix your problems. You don't spill it all over to your kids and then encourage them to start grumbling and complaining and disrespecting your spouse. And when they are allowed to do that, then they grow up doing that to their spouse, and it goes on and on and on, and nobody ever catches that. I think your parents and mine were of the I guess you call it old school, but it's really the right, where if they had problems like that, they really maintained the integrity and the respect of their own marriage by not, by being very careful to protect each other's reputation in front of the kids. Or, you know, your dad didn't complain about your mom's, you know, and once in a while there might be a joke, maybe slightly, but never in a way as to cause the children or anybody listening to think less of your wife or your husband. And a lot of times, you know, people will make comments degrading or disrespectful of their spouse in front of the kids or relatives or whoever. And as soon as you do that, it's kind of like you're creating now, you're magnifying the problem. And that's not what any of us would want done to us, so we shouldn't do it to our spouse either. But there are more serious benefits, serious repercussions and benefits of that command of children honoring your parent, because it says that's the only command that has a little qualification there, a little addition, so that it may go well with you.
And that you may live long in the land that the Lord gave you.
So we have seen throughout history that where the relationships within the family and the home, and then they break down, then the children get really off track, and they start mouthing off and allowing themselves to, because their parents do, and they think that's okay. And it's like the tiger's out of the cage. I mean, it's very hard to catch that and get it back into where it should be. I mean, and each of us knows there are things a little out of control with our own, in our own heart and mind and life that we feel yucky about. Well, there are ways to fix them, and that's the good news, right?
Right. And by the way, we were talking about the fifth commandment. That not only applies to mother and father, parents, but it implies to parents-in-law. So it's very important that that parents-in-law are honored as much as your own mother and father, and that your children see that. Because you know what? I don't think too many people think about this, but our well-being is directly tied to the fifth commandment. That's what that promise indicates. It's a double-edged sword. Either it'll go well with us, we'll live long, or it won't. God doesn't make compromises with commands. Commands are laws that are fixed in place, and you either have to live by them or you'll suffer the consequences. So that's important, and without the fifth commandment, someone once said, society can and will collapse on itself. So the imperative is singled out by God for blessing and well-being that it brings to the individual, family, and society. So even out of the context of the child dishonoring you, this statement is still true, i.e., someone doesn't have to be dishonoring you at the time for that to be true. And we can go on and on about, I mean, we can make a show about each commandment and how it affects relationships, and this is only the tip of the iceberg, but this is the general principle that we're talking about.
And it has to do with our eternal destiny, because, you know, when we die, we leave a legacy, and it goes on and on. And, of course, eternity is ahead for all of us, and we want to make sure that we're on the right side of things with our Maker in that regard. And so it's always a good time to stop and think and drop to our knees and, you know, I just ask God for wisdom to break through the fog in our brains and clarity on how things can line up, and ask for His blessing in turning things around. And it's really amazing how when you just start asking Him, things start happening. Yeah. And it takes a lot of the stress off of you, actually, when you give it up and give it over to God. So our song, Live Forever, the Highwaymen, from their album Highwaymen, The Road Goes On Forever. Bob picked that song because?
Yeah, it addresses what we do, something that actually Maximus said in The Gladiator, and that is, what we do in life echoes in eternity.
Hmm.
So, Live Forever is the song.
Just like I always told you, you're gonna miss me when I'm gone.
Nobody here will ever find me, but I will always be around. Just like the songs I leave behind me, I'm gonna live forever now. And you mothers, be good to one another. Please try to raise your children right. Don't let the darkness take them. Don't make them feel forsaken. Just lead them safely to the light.
When this old world is blown asunder and all the stars fall from the sky, remember someone really loves you. We'll live forever, you and I. I'm gonna live forever. I'm gonna cross that river. I'm gonna catch tomorrow now. I'm gonna live forever. I'm gonna cross that river. I'm gonna catch tomorrow now.
We're back with Music and Marriage, and we happen to be talking about the power and the promise and the purpose of the Ten Commandments in relationships between God and man, and how important that is. So, where we picked up is, well, I just happened to see a definition for RNA. We hear a lot about RNA and DNA these days. ribonucleic acid, which is a nucleic acid present in all living cells. And its principal role is to act as a messenger, carrying instructions from DNA to control the synthesis of proteins. Isn't that exciting? But
that has a lot to do with marriage and relationships, somehow. But it does.
It does, because the DNA is like the Ten Commandments, and the RNA is like our conscience, which is a messenger that carries instructions from the Ten Commandments to our will. And our will is then what needs to be engaged, and that's where the synthesis happens between the DNA, between the Ten Commandments, our conscience, and our will. It's a synthesis that needs to occur for us to actually obey them and then receive the benefits. So another important distinction in the Christian life is that it's not only law-based. And a lot of people go astray when they think that Christianity is just a bunch of laws, and that's where we run into the problem of legalism. And it's not just that. And so a lot of folks actually make up laws that they think apply to the Ten Commandments that are even more strict and that limit things in life. But they're just, they're not actual God's, they're not God's laws. For instance, God doesn't tell you not to drink, tells you not to get drunk. God doesn't tell you not to play cards. I don't even know if cards existed back then, but yeah, it tells you other things. But I mean, these are just little legalistic things that people think if you can avoid that, then you'll be more obedient. Or if you're an ascetic, for instance, you deny yourself of any kind of pleasure, that you'll be a better person. But actually, the Apostle Paul says in Colossians that 2, that harsh treatment of the body is not a prevention for sensual indulgence. In other words, it has no effect on that, really. It can for to a degree, but it's not where it's at. So and that is because Christianity is not just law-based, it's Spirit-led as well. The Spirit, Holy Spirit, leads us into all truth and empowers us in obeying God's commands as we decide to obey. And when we obey, the Spirit brings guilt to our conscience, which then is relayed to our will. And that's objective guilt. That's actual, real guilt. It's not guilt feelings, as Sigmund Freud said. Sigmund Freud may have been a very intelligent man, invented a whole system of psychology, but it was largely based on an untruth. And so the whole thing basically topples because of that. So the Spirit part of it is, and Paul listed in Galatians that there are fruits of the Spirit, that there is no law that governs these things. So, in other words, there's no law against them, and that is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, gentleness, goodness, and self-control. It's pretty amazing. So these are really, the other side of keeping God's law is to develop the fruits of the Spirit, because we worship God in spirit and in truth. You got to have both, right?
Exactly, Pop. You made some good points there, and I hope you can see how all these things we're saying relate to the spiritual side of life is really what's going to give you better or worse relationships. If your spouse is not behaving rightly toward you, you pretty much know they're doing wrong when they're doing wrong, because you feel it. You know it. This is wrong. You shouldn't be yelling at me. You shouldn't be spending our money drinking it away. You shouldn't be going around town with other women, and whatever. You can find a list for everybody. We know that. We feel that because we're imprinted with our Creator's outlook on things. Only natural. When you have a kid, he's going to look like you and act like you. But we have interference, and it's called sin. Unfortunately, it's called now selfishness. And it's very, very, very hard to get those cobwebs off of us. It's like a constant trouble. But we can enjoy, and we should actually, not just be constantly thinking of the problem or the negative and magnifying that. We need to magnify God. And then, because what he does is he minimizes our failings by offering his substitutionary work for us. That's the treat of Halloween, which just happens to be today. The trick is that, we would think we don't need him in the equation. All we need is our candy, But, you know, sin comes in different wrappers. You know, goodies. Some things are good for you, some things are not. And you can't always go by the wrapper or what Google tells you or anybody else. You have to have enough of your own desire to find out what is in my spirit and why and how is that going to become a treat, you know, to me. So that even if I am going through very hard time because of my spouse doing this or being that way, we can really bring, and we should bring everything, like the two commands that Jesus whittled it down to. If we love the Lord our God with all our mind, heart, mind, and soul, and our spouse as ourself, try doing that. I don't think I'll ever really accomplish that very fully in my life, but just having that guide immediately starts straightening everything out, because then I can become humble enough to say, oh, if all I'm doing in life and in my marriage and relationships is having to be right, having to have the last word, not analyzing, am I talking too much? Am I being rude? Am I being insensitive? Do I have a secret things going on and motives that are undermining everything? Am I making little comments, floating them out there that are destroying things? What am I doing to contribute to this?
And am I following the golden rule? Do to others what you would have them do to you. Have any of you ever hung up on your spouse because you were so angry at them? Well, you know, let's be honest. You know, I think a lot of us do that kind of stuff, and it's natural. And then, of course, we apologize later on if we're truly sorry. And that's what you should do, actually, if you're sorry.
Yeah, yeah, hanging up on people, number one, is rude, no matter what. And number two, it shows a lack of character that you're not even strong enough to handle, like, okay, you're getting a barrage of stuff, but use your brain and not just your feelings. Okay, your feelings are there,
right,
but you're going to have to face the fact that you're going to be calling back and you're going to want to fix it. So why not try to
just
do
avoid
that
it in the first place?
See,
like once I hung up my wife, hung up on her, and then she thought, well, she'd obey the golden rule, and so she did unto me what I did unto her. And hung up on me. So,
how do you know if you hung up first? I had to hang up.
No,
just kidding.
That's just a joke. But yeah,
okay.
it's you know. but we all tend to do these things. We're not perfect people here. So,
yeah.
You know, these things. You really do have to go buy the book on all this stuff. And actually, I have this little audio clip I should play for you about going by the book. It happened to be from a SEAL team movie series or TV series where the mission of a particular ship was put in danger because a SEAL team officer wanted to save one of his men at the expense of the mission of the Trident submarine, and the commander of the submarine had something to say to him, and this is what he said.
I admire your dedication, but the chain of command exists for many reasons. One reason, the hardest decision an officer can make is to sacrifice a life to preserve the greater good. But when faced with such a choice, things must be done by the book to remove emotion from the equation. Because as you well know, emotion clouds judgment. I understand, sir.
Notice the Navy SEAL officer said, understand, sir. He showed respect to the commander of the sub. And he submitted to his will, because he really did understand that if you didn't do something by the book, you could be putting the entire continent, northern continent, at risk here, rather as opposed to just one man. And so, by the book, to remove emotions from the equation, because as you know, emotions cloud judgment, and How true that is. That's why we have these commands.
It's why we have arguments. It's why we have alienation and disintegration of relationships, is because we're not going by the book. If you're doing anything, as I said before, if you're trying to build something and everybody comes with a different length measuring stick, you're mm-hmm. obviously going to make a mess and have to redo it. And it's really the same. And so we were talking about the deception, how restoring relationships through thinking about where we're deceived. And a lot of the deception is that I'm supposed to be happy. I'm supposed to, and this expectation that we have of things going our way is actually the opposite. What I should be thinking of, I want things to go your way. How can I help things to go your way today? Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. How can I help things to go God's way? How can I help things to go your way? And when we do that, God blesses that. He greases the wheels so much. And really, it's worth trying, because if you have relationships that are strained, just ask God to help you turn yourself around from your own what would make me happy to how can I make him happy? How can I make her happy? First, how can I make God happy? Now, you're operating within this spiritual realm, which on Halloween, you know, you see all these decorations that are very spiritual looking. They're witches and they're skeletons. Talk about eternal destiny. So they really remind us that there's evil and there's good. I don't see a whole lot of them with Jesus on the cross in the front yard at Halloween, but I see witches and ghouls and scary things that are all of the other world, which are real. Mm-hmm. But I wonder how much these kids are getting kind of really freaked out in their spirit seeing those things. Mm-hmm. It, you know, when we were kids for Halloween, it was like, you know, everything was good back then, right?
Dressed up as princesses and Superman or firemen or something like that. Right. But anyway, came a long way. But no, it's important. Really, what you teach your kids or even expose your kids to or allow them to be exposed to. I'm not saying you shouldn't let them trick or treat, but, you know, there are things you should do. And you were saying, and I think I might have been interrupted.
Whatever it was really good, I'm sure.
well, but the thing is that what we're saying, our children need to know this, okay? So they need to be instructed.
Eternal destiny.
Yeah, well, and the Ten Commandments, and what they actually mean, and the source of them, because...
And that we're regulated by them.
And that we're regulated.
Dad and Mom are regulated by something.
Right.
You and I grew up in homes, thankfully, where we never heard our parents yelling at each other.
Right.
It didn't happen because they had this fear of the Lord enough, fear of, hey, the family has to be preserved. How am I going to preserve the family if we're fighting in front of the kids?
Right.
Right.
And how are you going to preserve the family if you're working 24/7 and don't have time for your kids, and so you throw them in this activity and that activity and this daycare and that daycare, and you have very little input into their lives, and then at night you're so tired and you're busy or whatever, or you're watching your favorite TV show, and the kids could tend to be an annoyance, as opposed to a whole idea that the family is to be a place of order and peace and
nurturing,
because you know what, the when God gave the Ten Commandments to Moses, the first commandment was to worship the Lord your God only and have no other gods before you, and God put that there first because God knew that while he was inscribing those commandments on stone, the people of Israel, his children, were down there worshiping a golden calf they just made. Because they didn't, you know, they knew they had to worship God, but they didn't also equate it with, thou shalt have no other gods before me. And so they either didn't know or didn't make the connection, but now they know because the commandment is there. And so that's why we need to know the Ten Commandments. And
rules then, are good.
And then we need to do them.
Good rules are good. And let's not add to the rules that God made and colorize them in such a way that puts distance between us directly with God, because God is our friend. He's our helper. He's the one who by His Spirit will answer your prayers when you call upon Him and in spirit and in truth in your heart for help with your situation, whatever it is right now. It's not, oh, let's go to a therapist. Oh, let's read this book. Let's read that. Let's look at what the boundaries people say. Let's look at what the love languages people say. No, let's hear what God has to say, because that's the beginning and end of the whole story anyway, and it really simplifies things. It gets us from point A to that better place very quickly, much more quickly than you can imagine.
And it has to happen in society, in the home, because your kids aren't getting it from society. They're getting a completely different message and ideology. if you don't teach them, they're not going to know, and they'll be like Israel worshiping the golden calf. And
then wondering, why is destruction coming on our land, which happened throughout history because God had to clean clean things up. So we kind of... We want less suffering, and we want more treats and less tricks. So
And you won't see it on the courthouse walls anymore, even though the Ten Commandments are the largest antidote to injustice and criminality.
And just like that, things can get worse or get better, depending on which track we choose to put our mind on.
And we have a song now called Just Like That from Kieran Kane and Kevin Welch.
History lesson number one. There's not a thing that can't be done. Somewhere in this world of doubt, someone's gonna work it out. There you go. Just like that. We learn to crawl, we learn to walk. We learn to fly at Kitty Hawk. Next thing you know, one afternoon, we're driving golf balls on the moon. There you go. Just like that. We learn how to take our dreams and turn them into fine machines. There's one thing we haven't done. Haven't learned to live as one. Stand behind our border lines and talk about it all the time. History lesson number two. Not what you say, but what you do. There you go. Just like that. Find
war, although it's never worked before. If we want peace, we've got to start to heal the hurt in every heart. There you go. Just like that.
Welcome back to The Music of Marriage. You can go to our website for podcasts of our radio shows about how to fix marriage and relationship problems. We, Bob and Evie, have everything you need to know. Go no further. I'm just kidding. But we have a book called How to Make Your Marriage Sing, which is biblical principles to keep the music playing. Mm-hmm. These principles do apply to all relationships in many, many ways. And we have some music there you can listen to. But we're going to wrap up today's show, which had to do with the importance of checking in with your standards that you're measuring your life and your relationships by to see if perhaps you're applying the wrong length ruler. The rulers are 12 inches. So the Ten Commandments are God's rule. And they're always accurate, and they always work. And we hope that it's been helpful to you to hear what we've had to say about
that. And what's truly important is not on Google's rules. They're not Google's rules. They're God's rules. You know, the other thing that we have available to us is we have principles. Two in the Bible. We talked about laws and the spirit-led thing, and principles are like tools in a tool chest. You know, tools work better in some situations than others, so we can't say I can do without the law, for instance, because there will be consequences. So, and principles dictate many of these things, like divorcing your husband or wife without biblical justification. For instance, irreconcilable differences are not a biblical justification, and neither is no-fault divorce, both of which are the only laws governing our society today. So these aren't the laws that we need to pay attention to, and it shows how far we've departed from God's law in our society, in our life, and to the destruction of many. So we got to get back to God's law and what it says, and there are, and the principles that govern what we should and shouldn't do in specific situations. And around marriage, divorce, and all that stuff, there are many principles that govern the road that we should take. All these things are good things, and
constant challenge.
They're a challenge, but they bring peace, happiness, and joy.
And Tim McGraw has a song called Humble and Kind that is a good way to transition our thoughts into what's good for relationships.
That's right.
There's a light that glows by the front door. Don't forget the keys under the mat. When childhood stars shine, always stay humble and kind. Go to church 'cause your mama says to. Visit grandpa every chance that you can. Won't be wasted time. Always stay humble and kind. Hold the door, say please, say thank you. Don't steal, don't cheat, don't lie. I know you got mountains to climb, but always stay humble and kind. When the dreams you're dreaming come to you,
ship, and here's why. Bitterness keeps you from flying. Always stay humble and kind. Know the difference between sleeping with someone and sleeping with someone you love. I love you, ain't no pickup line, so always stay humble and kind. Hold the door, say please, say thank you. Don't steal, don't cheat, and don't lie. I know you got mountains to climb, but always stay humble and kind. When those dreams you're dreaming come to you, when the work you put in is realized, let yourself feel the pride, but always stay humble and kind. Eat a root beer popsicle. Shut off the AC and roll the windows down. Let that summer sun shine. Always stay humble and kind. Don't take for granted the love this life gives you. When you get where you're going, don't forget, turn back around. Help the next one in line. Always stay humble and kind.